Chapter 39. Mrs. Hawthorne. The Beach. Everlasting wife. A hot rage flies to my fingertips. I want to rip up the letter. Do what Charles should have done in the first place. Instead of sitting there in his summer house, reading it nightly. My fingers grip the paper tight. But it's a seashell I hold, not paper. And it's unyielding. It falls from my hands and splashes into the waves. I pat the pockets of my cardigan, turn around, and search the sand at my feet. Ronnie and Nikki are further up the beach, their gaze hot against my face. The gatekeeper strolls down to greet me. I'm growing to hate his grin. They say eavesdroppers always learn of things they wish they hadn't. Does that also hold true for those who read other people's letters? How dare you? I've got a right to know how Charles feels. Right? What a curious sense of the difference between right and wrong you possess. Snooping and prying into poor old Charles and his petty little secrets. For the first time, I understand Ronnie's anger. I want to slap him and watch that smile slide off his face. Ronnie barges between us, shoving past him to stand beside me.
She's every fucking right. That bitch is trying to control Charles, even though she's dead.
The gatekeeper takes a step back, hands held high to the sky.
You, of all people, Ronnie, you! You seek to defend Mrs. Hawthorne and her obsession with someone long gone.
Nikki walks across the sand to stand alongside us.
That's not what Ronnie is saying. The past should bury the past. Charles needs to let go of Clarissa. Ronnie's right, and so is Mrs. Hawthorne.
The gatekeeper laughs.
Is this our Bastille moment? Are you implying I'm abusing my position of power?
Ronnie clenches her fists and storms up to him. She's fearless, in a way I envy.
Fuck you and your Bastille, Dee. She just found out her man has been lying to her. And so has Nicky, with that asshole and his gambling. And me? Am I in some sort of bitter place?
I found her so hard to bear, with her foul mouth, her fouler morals, falling prey to Tom as a gambit for snaring someone else. But Graham has proposed to her. Yes, it would be an open marriage. Yes, that disgusts me. But I've read Clarissa's letter. I've plumbed the depths of a different kind of depravity. And yet I want to make things work with Charles. So are Ronnie and I really so different? A cold wind springs up, scattering grains of sand across the beach. I shiver against the unexpected chill. Ronnie, I say, I'm glad for you. If this marriage with Graham leads you to your own kind of happiness, I wish you the best. Her eyes narrow as she scans my face, looking for signs of false encouragement. Nikki steps forward. She's biting her bottom lip.
But how can you see that? He just told her he'd be unfaithful, that he'd have sex with other people. How is that marriage?
Ronnie flinches, as if the unvarnished truth from the mouth of a child has punched her in the stomach. Compromise, accommodation, nuance. These are words that don't translate well into an 18-year-old's language. But Ronnie and I understand each other. I smile at her.
So, what about his gambling, Nikki?
Ronnie says. It isn't a challenge. She's in earnest, her eyes imploring Nikki to follow her own star.
Me and Mrs. Hawthorne have made our decisions. All you did was run away from the card game like a silly little girl.
I reach out and draw Nikki to me. She's 18, Ronnie. Would we have acted any differently at her age? She lives in a world of black and white. We live in a world of greys. I have faith in her. I have faith in her dance in the rain. Ronnie pauses, but a smile grows over her features, and she joins us, seeking out Nikki's hand.
I've faith in you too, Nikki, but I've none in Giovanni. Be careful. Remember, none of us know how we died.
The sky darkens. The sun's dying embers reflect on the waves that crash into the shore, and the sand transforms to blood red. The gatekeeper coughs.
Faith is an overrated virtue, ladies. It has driven us to the brink, caused innumerable wars and countless heartbreaks. I sometimes think the world would be better off it had never been invented. And it's so elusive. You say you've faith in each other. Do you really?
I'm watching his face, squinting as the wind picks up, scattering grains of sand into our eyes. If his expression is revealing, I can't tell what it shows. But the gatekeeper is crafty, so I continue to try.
I propose to test this so-called faith. Let's find out where Nikki ran to once she left that christening party. And was Calyrus's letter anything more than an old keepsake? Did it warrant violating Charles's privacy?
He's wrong. Clarissa tried to manipulate Charles from beyond the grave.
And you, Ronnie, why don't you begin? Tell us the story of how that marriage proposal was the beginning of a blissful, happy ever after life.
Charles needs me. All this time I thought Clarissa was haunting me, but I was wrong. Charles was her target. I must go back. I should be next. But before I say anything, before I can state my case, the beach dissolves, and the gatekeeper's scarlet eyes wink towards me.
Chapter 40. Ronnie, Edinburgh. The flowers cradled in my arms appear brash. Sunshine intensifies their natural colour to a brassy fiesta of artificial hues. I pause at a bin, remove the cream-coloured stems and discard the rest. My eyes narrow against the sunlight, but my glasses remain tucked in my bag. Mum's lips press tight whenever I wore them.
You're not some Hollywood star. Take them off. Everyone will be looking at you and laughing behind your back.
She was very taken with what others might think. We always had to be perfect, beyond anyone's reproach. Our feet planted firmly on the ground, with the stars shining down. But we must never reach for them, never strive to be one. I've never been sure if she was protecting us from failure or keeping us in our place. A haze shimmers above concrete headstones that rise from the grounds in tones of white and black. The markers stretch wide and distant. Why isn't it raining? Heads should be bowed under dark umbrellas in this sombre location. Wrought iron gates add a solemn inflection. The stone angels that border the pathway evoke a certain reverence. But still, the sky should weep. My chest tightens, and I force myself to walk up the winding path that's punctuated with benches adorned with gold plaques. Willow, a wonderful daughter who was taken too soon. Uncle Bob, who loved to sit and watch. It would be nice to sit with Willow or Bob. Perhaps they'd whisper who they once were and tell tales of a wonderful life. But if I rest, I might outstay my welcome. So I persist.
Turning the corner, I bend forward, clutch my stomach, and pause. I'm getting too close. I've not been here since the funeral, many years ago. She's buried next to Gran. A burst of laughter. My head swivels. A group of teenagers loiter on a bench. Girls sprawl along it, their arms wrapped around knees bent to their chests. Boys sit above them, perched like pigeons on the backrest, legs dangling in shorts. Cigarettes hang from their mouths, and they pass around cans of lager. A girl grins at me and throws an empty packet of crisps to the ground. My lips clench together, but they're unable to suppress the rage on my tongue. I storm towards them. Have some decorum. Pick up your rubbish, your lager cans and buttons, and get the fuck out of here. The tallest boy shuffles towards me, hands deep in his pockets, a sneer sliced on his face. His mates rise to join him, squealing and hooting, excited by the sudden charge in their D. A girl with stringy brown hair fans herself, grabs a boy's shoulders, and leaps onto his back. They hurl words like hyenas circling prey.
Hey, you not got anything more to say, missus?
Yeah, she's lost her voice now, eh? I tilt my head back and laugh. Their so-called intimidation is infantile at best. I face down better in school playgrounds. Just for a moment, I switch on my head teacher role. Grow up. You have 5 minutes, then it's the police. Starting now. They flinch, and I walk through them. They fall away easily, as is often the case. It only takes one, then the rest back down. Just kids, bored and finding their place in the world, doing all the wrong things at the wrong time, trying to fit in. Although I shouldn't have lost my temper and wished them to grow up too soon. Not when this burial ground awaits. Fresh roses lie on her grave. It isn't surprising. They visit every Sunday to replenish and pay their respects. Another ritual I'm not part of. Not their fault. It was me that forced them away. Me who cut them off. The hum of a mower and the scent of freshly cut grass snap into the air. I wrinkle my nose at the intrusion and also the pollen. Everyday people going about their jobs, keeping the grounds maintained as if this is just an ordinary day. My eyes squeeze tight and I rock back and forth on my heels, afraid to take the first step onto spongy ground. When I was 19, I stood in her bedroom while she was fixing her hair for a night out with her mates. Every Saturday, they'd go down to the local pub for dancing and drinks. She worked two jobs to afford that one treat. "I'm pregnant," I said. The hairbrush paused in her hand and she swallowed hard. "Do you want it?" Her reflection spoke back. It was as if she couldn't place herself fully in the conversation, as if she was trying to make it less real. I shrugged. "Don't worry. Whatever you want, we'll sort this together," she said. Why did I ruin her evening? I could have waited until morning, but I was selfish. I wanted her to take my pain and make it her own. Within a week it was gone, never spoken about again. There had been no recriminations, no bad girls thrown at me. But I felt like shit for letting her down. The baby would be 21 now. Had Mum ever thought about it? Mourned the absent love from her arms? Like me? I slipped down to my knees in front of her headstone and trace her name. Joyce. The dust coats my fingertips chalky white. I wipe them clean across the grass. She'd never left this little village. Never felt the Mediterranean sun on her pale shoulders or dipped her blood-red painted toes into a warm sea. Always too busy making ends meet. The cancer devoured her piece by piece, like chewing maggots descending on rotten meat. My proud mother, the ferocious warrior who never had a chance. Even her closest friends couldn't bear to watch her being consumed alive. Visits tapered off. "She can fight this," said a doctor, as if it would be her fault if she died. It took all my strength not to spit in his eye. "You don't die because you didn't try hard enough to stay alive." In my 20s, I caught her once, gazing at her face in the bedroom mirror. Her eyes were glazed, and I hoped the drugs would prevent her from witnessing the horror we could see. I asked her what she was doing. "I've dwelt too much on my beauty, cared too much about how I looked. God's punishing me for being vain." "Fuck you, God." I collapse on top of her, bring my knees up to my chest and curl into a ball. Grass soft against my damp cheek. My fingers scratch through the grass and roots and find the soil. I dig my nails in deeper, pull out clumps of earth. If I could just touch her once more, if I could draw her to me and breathe in her perfume one last time, that's all I ask. But it's pointless. What's left of her here? I roll onto my back and sobs shake my body. Would she have cared so much about beauty if my dad had stayed? Or if other men didn't value women the same way? Measure their worth by how they'd appear on their arms, or look under their weight when they fucked them in bed? My hands clench and my fists pummel the earth. "But you could have tried harder to make Dad stay, Mum. Why didn't you laugh at his jokes rather than roll your eyes and wander off? You could have faked a liking for football, joined him with his passion. But a couple of hours have been too much to pee. You were too strong, Mum. You made him feel weak in comparison. Did you not know that each chip of disapproval pushed him away? I heard you crying when he was gone. Saw you pretend to enjoy the nights on the town, when all you wanted was to be back in his arms. You are smart, Mum. Why couldn't you understand that a woman has to be what a man wants? That you must keep your true self hidden and focus on the prize? If you tried harder to keep him, life would have been so different. You wouldn't have been so sad and lonely. And I would have had my dad." I stroke the earth, gathering the dirt and the grass back to where it belongs. Mum would dislike an untidy grave. "I hate how everyone comments on how beautiful you were, as if that's all that defined you. You were 1,000 tiny little things. A smile of encouragement at the swing park when I was too shy to ask another girl to play with me. A song rising from the kitchen on a freezing winter's day. A burst of laughter that lightened dull Sundays. Such a brilliant artist. We should have framed your prizes. Now I don't know where they are." "When something knocked me hard to the floor, you taught me how to get back up. But most of all, you are my home." My fingers play with the dirt gathered under my nails. "But I've got news, Mum. You'll be so excited. He only asked me a few days ago, but I rushed up here to tell you. I'm getting married. His name's Graham. And he's so smart and kind. He's a school inspector, so he has a really good job. You'd love him. And don't worry, he won't ever leave me. Not like Dad left you. He doesn't fall in love easily. He didn't even want a relationship at first, but he's fallen for me because I fought hard. We're buying a house together, and soon maybe children. I wish you could meet him. I wish you could be there at the wedding. Dress me in your veil." "I still have it, Mum.
I kept it safely wrapped up in the box for when it was my turn. My hands spread against the grass and I pushed myself upright. But that's the future, and you're trapped in my past. My palms rub against my thighs to shake off the dirt. I wish you were here, your arms wrapped around me. Do you remember when we were young? You'd carry me from the bath and wrap me up in a warm towel. I'd giggle and tuck my head into the crook of your arm. You'd tell me I was too big to be carried at 7, but you still would, for years to come. On the carpet in front of a blazing coal fire, you'd dress me in pink cotton and tell me a story as you brushed my long hair. I wish I could travel back in time, sneak into that scene, and whisper to that little girl, "Cling on to this moment. You haven't got long. Turn around and study your mummy's face. Examine every detail. You won't remember it when she's gone." I lay my cream stems next to the vase. Without water, they won't last long. I shrug. Everything dies. My lips touch the gravestone. "I can't do it alone, Mum. I miss you too much. Come back to me. Come back. I beg you. If you ever loved me, come back." A shiver runs through me. Eyes dart to the sky. The haze that shimmered above us has lost its shine. It's dull now. A misty fog. Chapter 41. Nikki. Mondello. Head bowed, Gio stares at the floor, as if searching for something to save him. His hands comb through his hair with a long sigh. He lets them flop and hang loosely. "He can't look at me. He knows I'm right. That we can't go on like this, living like beggars. He's still my Gio. Still the guy that makes my heart sore. But things need to change. I can't live like this anymore. You've got a problem, Gio." He shakes his head in silence and slumps down into a chair at the kitchen table. Sunlight streams from the window to bathe his despair. He hunches over and burrows his head in his arms. Stroking my throat and swallowing my disgust, I place my palms flat down on the table opposite him. He needs to stop feeling so bloody sorry for himself, admit what he's done, and find a way for us to move forwards. I believed in his dreams. He painted such pretty colours of the way we'd live our lives here. Own our little pizzeria, a beach house, all under the glorious Italian sun. Well, the sun is still here, but it only highlights the dirt of our lives. The dreams glossed over with fresh coats of his lies. "Gio, how could you do it again?" His head lifts in slow motion. His eyes, red-veined, are heavy with tears, and his hand swipes snot from under his nose.
"I'm no bad person. I do it for you, Nikki. No, for me."
Stumbling back, my hands clutch the edge of the table. "I did it for me? Me? He never accepts blame. Never acknowledges what heartache he's caused. And he wants me to feel sorry for him. But I don't. My hands clench into fists. I want to hit him, scratch him, rattle the pity out of him. Wake him up to what he is. I detest the sight of him. I slam my fist against the table. "You didn't do it for me. You did it because you wanted to. Because you can't stop yourself. Because you're an addict." His nostrils flare, and he thrusts the table away. It hits me in the stomach, and I bend over winded and shocked from the blow. Stomping around the room, his hands clamp into his hair and, like a wild man, he tears at it while muttering in Italian. "Look at the state of you," I shout. "And it's true. I've never really noticed before, but there are days, even weeks, when he lets himself go.
His hair is greasy, and his unwashed body reeks of old garlic. He walks towards me, T-shirt stained with splashes of spaghetti sauce and grey joggers baggy at the knee. Who knows when he last changed them? Yet, last week, at the christening, he was the same gorgeous man I first met. My eyes roll. Of course, it's a pattern. He's like this when he's trapped in gambling, so deep in the hole of losing that he doesn't care about anything else but how to escape. And the only way to do that is another bet.
Nicky, I don't do it again. It was the bastardo, Filippo. He do the bluff, pretend he have bad cards. Make a fool out of me. I would won if he tell the truth.
I blink. You'll never change. You disgust me. Gio growls, grabs my golden bowl, the one we bought in Mondello, and throws it against the wall. I gasp as it shatters into pieces.
Eat this place, Nicky. It's too much hot.
The dining table is hurled into the air. It slams against the ceiling, splinters, breaks, and crashes back to the floor. It spreads out on the tiles like an unfinished jigsaw. I back against the wall, my mouth open in disbelief. It's not him. It's this place. The place he lured me to with his promises of happy ever after and a fairy tale ending. He was gambling just the same at home, but on different things. It isn't the different country that's at fault. It's him.
All the people, they say, come, Gio, drink the beer, play the cards.
He picks up a chair and throws it along the floor. It skitters across the tiles and lands at my feet.
I not got the problem, like you say. It's this place. It not good for me.
Maybe it's time for me to wake up to the reality of what my life has become. The wall has another fresh hole in it from Gio's bashing. The night we came back from the mountain trip, I'd asked him about money, and he'd punched a hole then too. The shitty dining table lies in bits on the floor. We've nowhere to eat now. The second-hand tied-up fridge that I refused to eat out of. The brown-stained sofa that was only temporary, but has never been replaced. It's a dump. All the little things I bought in Mondello just emphasise it. I lean against the wall and slide down to the floor. Bring my knees to my chest and wrap my arms around them. Gio shuffles across the tiles towards me, his face slack and mouth open. If any more crap comes from his lips, I might scream the place down. His hand rests on my knee and I flick it away with a scowl.
Nicky, it got the hold of me. I don't let it do it again.
What do you mean, again? He smiles.
I know what to do next time. I know not make the same mistake. I take it slow. Put the small money on and I walk away.
My lips part and a scream tears up my throat.
Next time? Next time? You don't get it, do you? Even after all this? You scummed, you. You'll never change.
He kicks out at the remnants of the table, then rushes into the bedroom. Is he going for more things to break? I follow him as far as the doorway, ready to tell him that this time I don't care. He's kneeling at the bed, groping underneath the mattress. He grunts in triumph and I back away. I know what he has hidden under there. He bursts back into the living room, waving his knife. He's lost his reason. He grips the material of his T-shirt, gathers the cotton into his fist, and slices with the blade. The shirt rips open to show his bare chest.
You take a knife, and you stab my heart!
Sweat is dripping from his face, and his eyes are glazed like a madman.
Enough,
I whisper, and climb to my feet. He moves in closer,
and leans a hand against the wall just above me, the knife in his clenched fist. His face is so close to me now that when he yells, bubbles of foamy spittle hit my cheeks. I use my arm to wipe it off and wish my mum could walk in, save me like she's done so many times before. But I was a child then, and this is no skint knee from a fall in the park. A kiss and a plaster won't help me now. I have to leave. Get out. Let him calm down.
Nikki, I bad man. I no want hurt you. I sorry.
He throws the knife to the floor, leans down, kisses my nose, and brushes the hair from my eyes. Where are we now? My head is dizzy. I can't keep up with all the different mood changes. What version of Geo is this? And then I get it. This is, come here, little girl. Come and be good, and let me make everything better. It would be so easy to comply and give in, and let him wrap me in his arms and forget everything.
We start again. We go live with my father and my brother. He'll give me job. I take it this time. And we save the money. We have good life, my Bella Nikki.
His brother will give him a job? Hasn't he been working with his brother since we got here? If you've not been working, Gio, where have you been going every day? He shrugs.
I was try be professional card player, but I do the job. Okay. Nothing to worry about now.
I duck under his arms and push him against the wall. All this time, when I was alone in the flat, waiting for him to squeeze some time in for me, he wasn't even working. And everyone must have known about it, except me. It wasn't just his jealousy that was keeping me isolated. He was keeping me away from the truth.
Gio, you're a liar, and I hate you.
With a guttural roar, he picks at my statue from the shelf on the wall. Santa Rosalia, the gift for my mum.
No, Gio, no!
But it's too late. He smashes it to the floor, falls to his knees and sobs.
Sorry, Nikki. I'm sorry. I buy you new.
No, you won't. And I walk away. In the bedroom, I collect my suitcase from under the bed, check my passport is there, and pull out an old box of sanitary towels. Mum had put money in it for any emergencies. She wanted reassurance that I'd always have a way home. I told her I'd be fine, but she insisted. She made me promise never to tell Gio about it. The men in your life don't need to know everything, Nikki. Always keep something back for yourself. Something that only belongs to you. I throw off my flip-flops. I won't need them where I'm going. I change into my trainers. I'll never have a home with Gio. Never have nice things. Life will always be like this. No matter how hard I try to make things pretty, he'll destroy everything. I'm just an accessory. A Barbie doll. Someone to make him feel tall. His true love is gambling, and I won't be second best to anyone or anything. Not anymore. I'm going home, and I'll make something of myself. Be somebody. Maybe start college. I'll never rely on a man again. But one day, after all this pain, if I do find myself fancying someone, he'll love me beyond anything or anyone else. He'll never leave me or make me feel second best like Gio has, or abandon me like Dad. I walk back to the living room and he's lying on the floor. Clumps of his hair lie beside him. He looks up with his gorgeous brown eyes and he says,
"My Bella, Nikki."
I laugh, spit in his face. "Fuck you and all your fucking Bella Bella shite." A growl rumbles from deep within him. He springs to his feet and picks up the knife. A glint of steel flashes in the sunshine.
You stay! I the good man! You see, Niki! You see!
He's smiling, almost pleading. Fear trickles down my spine. I edge backward, closer to the front door, closer to freedom. Geo stumbles forward as if he's drunk, but the point of the bleed does not waver.
You no leave me. I no allow.
I can't keep my eyes from the glinting metal. One more step back on trembling legs. Our eyes meet, and I'm caught by the madness that shines there. Blindly, I fumble behind me, search for the door handle. But my fingers only trail over the door's wooden surface. Tears blur my vision.
Geo, it's me, Niki. You're Bella, Niki. Remember me? I promise we'll be okay. But doing the silly knife, let's go and get some pizza. We haven't eaten, and I'm hungry. Then we can cuddle up in bed and sleep. I bet you're tired, Geo, like me.
Trying to keep his attention on my face, my hand searches, seeking out the handle and my escape. The warm metal of the doorknob slides into my palm, and I twist and pull. The door opens, and I turn to flee, but he springs forward and slams his hand on the door above my head. It thuds shut, and I scream. I turn back to him, just as the knife slices towards my throat.
I nothing left to lose, he whispers.
Chapter 42. Mrs. Hawthorne, Edinburgh. Clarissa's letter tumbles from my fingers. It flutters on the breeze, but it's her laughter coaxing it along. My arms hang loosely at my side, and I stare at a mark on the wall. Jack must have scratched the paintwork with his paws. It will need to be repaired. I'll ask Charles if he's any leftover paint when he's back. Charles. He lied. It was all a monstrous lie. There was no perfect marriage. There was no perfect wife. Clarissa Ballerina was a fraud. How could someone do that to a person they loved? Someone they cared for? Why, on your deathbed, would you confess to an affair? What did she have to gain? It must have crushed Charles to read it. I pull out a cigarette and light it, watch the end burn. My feet tap against the wooden floor again and again. Think, what did she have to gain? Ash gathers on the cigarette. I flick it and survey the room. Photographs of her surround me. Images taunting from the past. Charles and her at some fancy wedding, hiking in green anoraks, dogs running beside them. A formal affair. Him in a dinner suit, her in a red velvet gown. She smiles with friends around a table, Charles by her side, all of them wearing silly paper hats. A beach where she's sunning herself, Charles relaxing at her feet. Now they're cuddled up in knitted scarves, snow pure behind them. I throw my cigarette onto the floor and slap my forehead. Of course. I turn in a circle, her gaze falling on me from every direction. This is it. This is what she gained. A shrine to her stardom. The summer house, her theatre. With Charles, her audience. Clarissa, the star. She was back where she wanted to be. Centre stage. Sparkling in the limelight. She'd have suspected Charles was too kind to throw away the mementos of their life. But she had to be sure, had to be certain. She wouldn't be hidden in a shoebox at the top of a wardrobe, gathering dust, forgotten. And so she stuck in a blade of guilt and twisted it, made his love bleed. Yes, she'd had an affair, or so she said. But whose fault was that? She accused Charles. In her deathbed confession, she got what she wanted. A guarantee that he'd save every image. Broken by her betrayal of trust, but blaming himself, they were vital to Charles. In scanning each picture, he was searching for signs that she'd loved him. Wasn't that exactly what she'd instructed him to do? Look, Charles. Look for the love. Unravelling in a twisted maze of obsession and haunted by his fruitless search for the truth, Charles had become ensnared by the past. But she hadn't counted on me. As the saying goes, the show's not over till the fat lady sings. And it's time for the main attraction. Time for you to exit the stage, Clarissa Ballerina. Alexa, play CeeLo Green, Forget You. I drag a chair over to the wall, stand on it, grab the oil painting and throw it to the floor. Fuck you. My arm runs along a low bookshelf, another 10 pictures gone. Fuck you too. There are another 6 on an office desk. They slam to the floor as well. The windowsill has 5, each in silver frames. I get closer. These are younger versions of them. A few show them in school uniforms. So sweet. I raise them above my head and hurl them aside. Any more? The piano, of course. How lovely. Charles is gorgeous here. Clarissa standing beside him in Chanel and pearls. Is that a smile she wears? I hold it closer. Charles is looking at her, but her eyes are elsewhere. Who is the man at the edge of the frame? Is he the one she's smiling for? I flinch. What the hell am I doing? I fling the photo across the room. You nearly had me there, Clarissa Ballerina. I was going as crazy as Charles for a second. Music. Now. Where's that bloody song? The funeral song. The one that taunts me most nights. An old-fashioned hi-fi sits in the corner, and on top rests a stack of CDs. Greedily, I file through them, but it's not there. I scratch my hands in my hair. He's not the type to ask Alexa to play it. Charles is too traditional for that. It must be somewhere. I press the eject button, and there it is, waiting to be played. To hell with this. Alexa, play Pink, So What? Seizing the hi-fi with both hands, I swivel it back and forth until it topples and falls. The CDs and albums arranged carefully inside spill out, clattering to the floor. A bundle piles at my feet. I kick them across the floor. I bet they spent ages making these choices, ensuring each artist set the right tone. No Bay City Rollers or David Essex, only serious contenders like Bob Dylan or Nina Simone. Fuck their sanctimonious taste. Alexa, play ABBA, Waterloo. Should I? Little porcelain dolls, about 20 of them, lined up behind glass doors of a miniature mahogany cabinet. Dancers striking delicate poses in tulle of all colours. Why not? But I need a hammer. There's one under the sink. I rush to the house and grab it, along with a brush and a roll of black rubbish bags. Racing back, the autumn leaves crunch under my feet. Funny how the sound makes me lighter, alive once more. I lift the hammer high, and the glass in the cabinet smashes. The dolls stare. I grab them and rip the tool from their bodies, pound them into smithereens. Dancing around the room, I sweep up the spoils of my battle into bin bags. The photos, the porcelain, the musical anthems, all the final fragments of the life Clarissa left behind. I scramble about, making sure there isn't a trace left of her, and stand back to admire my artistic endeavour. I scream and raise my foot. A shard of glass has pierced through my shoe. I hobble across the grass to the kitchen and dampen a tea towel under warm water. My teeth clench as my fingers prise the glass out. Blood trickles along the sole, and I press the towel firmly against the flow. What time is it? Charles won't be much longer. He'll be furious when he sees the carnage I've waged. But wait. Charles read the letter the day I got back from lunch with my sisters. He was sobbing down the phone. That was before we officially got engaged, before I moved in. So, all this time he's been complicit, hiding her letter, hiding all the photographs, hiding the truth of his marriage. The bastard. Spittle builds up at the side of my mouth. I smear it off with the back of my hand. He's made a complete fool of me. I slip my other shoe off and limp back towards the summer house. Fingertips circle my temples, an edgy feeling overpowering me as though I need to flee from this place. How could he have lied so long and made me feel so inferior to the facade of his marriage? I rummage in the bin, looking for their wedding photo. There must be one. I need to see it. She's stunning, in her bouffant veil, dark tendrils of hair framing high cheekbones. Bridesmaids in long chiffon dresses stand beside them, pearls in their hair. His arm is around her waist, and in her hands, a pale pink peonies. They weren't just her favourite flowers. It was her wedding bouquet, and he still buys them for me. A droplet of blood splatters the photo. My hand has been cut on all the broken glass. I smear it across their faces and rip them apart. The hammer rises above my head, and I smash it down on their history. Frame splinter, glass cracks into 1,000 pieces. I've gone mad, but the noise soothes my scars. All the broken promises across a lifetime of years. Smash. All the happy ever after lies. Smash. All the call you in the mornings. Smash. For every man that called me special. Smash. Every time I started to let myself believe. Smash. And for every time I tried. Smash. Stop. Stop right this very minute. Charles shouts. He stands in the doorway, face pale and body trembling. Jack is cradled in his arms. It's as if time has returned to our first meeting. He's the image of how he looked in the park. But this time it's not grief that scares him. It's me. Put the hammer down and get out of my summer house. I'm long past being told what to do by a man. I lift my arm above my head, ready to strike again. But then I pause and blink. Underneath Jack's fur lies a bunch of peonies. Charles must have bought them when he was out. Rage reddens my skin. The hammer slides from my hand and thuds to the floor, and I leap towards him, screaming and scratching. He steps backward and turns to protect Jack. But not before I've plucked the stems from his arms. I shred their petals into tiny pieces and scatter them like confetti onto the shards of their life. I turn and ask him, "Why, Charles? Why?" He puts Jack down, out into the garden, and closes the door behind him. His hands rake through his hair, and he opens the Venetian blind and stares out of the window. He won't look at me, barefooted, bleeding, face wet with tears. I'm breathless. My head spins and I collapse onto the piano stool with my head sunk in my hands. "Why did you let me think your marriage was perfect?" He turns towards me, but all the warmth of my Charles has vanished. "My marriage was perfect. If there was an affair, and I'm undecided on that, then it was my fault." "Your fault? Your fault she betrayed you?" "I was working too many hours. I forgot who she was." "But why did you lie to me? I never felt good enough to walk in her shoes. I asked you so many times to open up about your feelings. I let her become my shadow while I followed my own stardom in academia. She should never have felt invisible. She was the star. I let her down badly. I drove her to whatever she did." He walks past me, glass crackling under his shoes, and pulls open what I assume is a back door. I stand, not quite believing he's going to walk out and leave me. But it's a large storage space. Newspaper cuttings and theatre brochures paper the inside. The colours are faded, their edges aged a soft lemon. But there she is, dazzling in a pirouette. In another, in pink tulle, she's caught mid-leap. A large photograph framed in gold sits on a shelf in the centre. She's in black velvet, mesh and feathers. Odile in Swan Lake. A glass vase of wilting flowers stands to the side. He must have been planning on replacing them with the ones I ripped up. I was wrong. The summer house isn't a shrine. It's this cupboard, hidden and private. And there, next to the photograph of her starring role, is the peacock urn. And before I can think, I jump over and snatch it. "Return that to me now." His voice is low and void of emotion. No normal person would behave the way Charles has. No one else would build a shrine to someone who hurt them so much. Who would mourn that kind of love? But wait. Have I not done that all my life? Chased men who didn't love me enough? Made excuses for their bad behaviour? Searched for the smallest of signals in their conversations? Examined every word and action for signs of love? All he wanted was proof too. Have I not done the same with every man, even with Charles? Accepted less than I deserved? I wouldn't listen to friends or take any advice. But maybe I can still save Charles. Still save us. "Charles, I'm sorry. Don't you see she didn't really love you? She cheated and had an affair. Who knows how many? But I love you. I see how wonderful you are. I can bring the light back into your world. You don't have to search any longer. Love stands right here." I don't want your notion of love. Not after your behaviour today. I would choose Clarissa 1,000 times in any lifetime over you. I smash the urn to the floor. Her ashes spill out in a thick clump. I spread them with my feet. Fragments of bones scratch the bare skin of my soles. They're not as smooth as I thought. What do you think of your whore now, Charles? A scream cuts the air. It's not mine. Grabbing my hair, pulling it at the roots, he throws me to the floor. He looms over me, his eyes brimming with tears. Are they for her or me? He picks up the hammer and kneels beside me. I screw up my eyes, and the first blow knocks my head to the side. Blood streams across the floor, and the arid ashes slake their thirst. Perhaps love, for me, was always going to end this way.
Chapter 43. Ronnie, Liverpool. I'm so fucking ready to marry Graham. Worked so hard to snare him. From church windows, a stream of light will shine on the crisp white tulle of my dress. It will crackle and shimmer, a rainbow of colours. And with the reddest of roses clutched in my hands, I'll float up the aisle. Music will soften the air, and then, as if spun from golden threads, the most delicate cherubs will appear. They'll circle around us and scatter specks of golden glitter. At the altar, he'll turn and whistle his appreciation and will tenderly clasp hands, eyes only on each other. I'll hold on tight, in case the bastard tries to do a runner. I laugh. Maybe the cherubs are a touch too far. All of it is. Since we're marrying in a registry office, I know the fairy tale version of my youth. Still, it's the thought that counts, right? And the money we saved bought us a Maldives honeymoon. One last look in the dressing room mirror, and I remove Mum's bridal veil, fold its delicate lace back into lemon tissue paper, and close the satin box. I'll still wear it, but I'll buy a tea-length sweetheart gown and embrace a 50s theme. Graham isn't inviting any of his family, but a few of his new friends are coming. I don't like them. They're cheaters, liars, and dirty rats. But I'll rid his life of them after the wedding. He'll settle down into married life much better that way. As for my guests, I'm not sure. Friendship has always been a transitory transaction for me, one made out of necessity or comfort at any given time or place. It's not that I'm selfish or not giving of myself. I've had some great friendships, but they're fleeting. They last as long as I remain in one place. I haven't the inclination to compete from afar with all the new people that replace me. My time had to be focused on my career and finding the one. I could invite relatives from back home, but there'd be so many questions and hushed tones. Graham is right. We're better doing this on our own. Music booms from my bathroom. It's weird how, in just a few weeks, we will be moving in together. But then, I suppose we've been living in and out of each other's homes for a while, so we'll barely notice the difference. At least the new bedrooms won't ever linger with other women's perfume. Graham, I'm going downstairs for a drink. Do you want me to bring you up a glass of wine?
I'm good. Enjoying your strawberry bubble bath and catching up with the work paper before I go and meet James. You're still okay about me going out tonight, aren't you?
My hand pauses on the stair banister and my fingers scratch at a speck of dust. James. One of his rat pack. I laugh to make my response appear more carefree than it is. Sure, at least I won't have to listen to that awful music you're playing. But we've got some houses to look at near the new school in the morning, so don't make it a late one.
Ah, you're getting old, Ronnie. You'll be wanting slippers and hot chocolate next.
Yeah, yeah, whatever. You'll still fancy me. Remember, I've seen where you've been, and they weren't five-star locations like me. His chuckles follow me into the kitchen, where I open the fridge. No wine, except for a drizzle in the bottom of a bottle of white. Typical. We must have drunk more than I thought last night. Sighing, I grab my purse and house keys, shout, "Back soon!" Though he probably won't hear it, and open the front door to a wall of summer heat. Jim stands there, fist dangling in the air. Oh, Ronnie, I was about to knock. It's bad enough that Graham goes out on the pull with this bastard, but now I have to welcome him at my home. Forcing a smile, I tell him, "Graham's not ready, is in the bath. And wasn't he meeting you down the pub?" The rat grins like he's spied some cheese and scurries past me into the hall. Yeah, but, well, we haven't properly met. And I thought, why not pop round earlier and meet the woman my man is about to marry? His eyes graze up and down the length of my bare legs, and I wish I'd worn trousers. It's not a problem, is it? He's probably disease-ridden. I'll need to disinfect the house with bleach after he's gone. That's fine. Graham won't be long, and it'll be good to get to know you better. He wanders through to the kitchen, unsteady on his feet. He's obviously had a few drinks before arriving here. Dutch courage. But for what? The fridge door opens, and he stands peering in. "Do you have any wine? Or maybe a beer?" The cheek of it. Sorry, no. I was just on my way out for some. We finished it off last night.
I bet you had sexy times all pissed up, eh? Women are much looser that way. More adventurous.
My teeth tug at the corner of my bottom lip. What is he really here for? It's not to get to know me, that's for sure. I should call Graham and tell him to hurry up. But I've never really spent time with one of the rat boys before. Graham never lets them in the house. They always pick him up outside, or he meets them elsewhere. What's behind James's smile? Opening a drawer, he takes out scissors and a drinking straw. He knows where everything is. So he's been here before. When? He shakes a small plastic packet filled with white powder and winks. What a line. Or does the great head teacher refrain from such things? What the fuck is he doing? Before I can stop myself, I reach over and grab it. Like he's a school kid with contraband in the playground. You can't bring that into this house. A thought slashes through my mind. Does Graham take cocaine as well? Is that why he's always full of energy, even after a night out? For a minute, maybe more, James and I stare at each other. Then he edges over. And I realise it's not just beer that's glazed his eyes. It's this drug too. He's high. Look, let me go and get Graham and tell him you're here. And you can both sort this out together, okay? He runs his fingers slowly up my arm.
I don't think so, Miss Ronnie. Graham's told me all about the stuff you two get up to. You're a very dirty girl, aren't you? Why don't you give me the coke back, and we can have a little party of our own?
Flames of rage burn inside me. He's far worse than I ever thought. I turn, but he clutches my arm.
Oh, come on now. Graham has his fuck toys and you don't give a damn. What about a little bit of fun for us, eh? Come on, let's have a party. Maybe Graham will join in.
I push his filthy hands away and take a deep breath. Graham is nothing like you. You'd think as a friend you'd not be hitting on his fiancée. James grabs my wrist and unfurls my hand. takes back the coke and laughs.
Oh, fiancé, yeah, that'll last too. You dumb bitches are all the same. You're a passing fling, nothing more. This has all happened before. You're not special, all that, but you think you are.
He licks a finger, dips into the packet, and rubs the powder along his gums.
He told me this is our last night together. He needs to kick it all on their head for a while, but that's not going to happen. He'll come back to me in the end, and he's a good wingman.
Grow the fuck up. You're pathetic. Get out. Grabbing his arm, I pull him out of the kitchen and into the hall. He stumbles, falls onto the wall, then rights himself. My hands shape into fists at my side. It's hard to keep them there. I want to punch him so much, but that's what he wants. He's trying to split us up, stop the marriage, so he can have Graham all to himself. Last time, get the fuck out of my house. He sneers.
Come on, give us a kiss and a feel. I'll let you into a secret about Graham if you do.
I should shout upstairs for Graham and let him deal with this. But anger's raging inside me. I grab him again and push him out the door. There's nothing you can tell me about Graham that I don't already know. I get it. It's all about the cult. It fucked him up. But you, you've no excuses, except that you're a clown. His head tilts back and he laughs.
Oh, he told you the cult thing. Yeah, you're not so clever, Miss Head Teacher.
He uses that line on them all. I press a fist to my mouth and bite down. You're lying. Get out before I tell him what you've done.
I wouldn't do that.
He sneers.
You think you're so above everyone, with your airs and graces. But you're not. You're a dumb fuck. Graham's been playing you for months. That was never a cult, sweetie. Ask him.
And with that, he leaves, pulling the door closed with a bang. I rub my forehead. Is he right? My head spins. I sit down on the bottom step of the staircase, letting the house keys spin around my finger, and remember that first chat. He'd grown up in a cult-like religion, not allowed to mix with other children, engaged to be married since he was 15. He spent his life knocking on doors and handing out leaflets. But then his family disowned him, shunned him. Except he hadn't grown up like that at all. None of that happened. James didn't ask, what cult? He already knew it was all made up. It crashes into me. I was so obsessed with being the partner he needed that I accepted his reasons with no hesitation. Made my own excuses for his sexual behaviour. Jumping on the feeble explanation of his lost youth to defend him. But Graham hadn't been part of a cult. It was lies. I'd accepted because it let me excuse the way he treats women. A lie. A lie. Everything about him. Everything about us. A lie. My cheeks burn. How could I have let this happen? Was I so intent on not being my mother that I'd become a worse version? Tears sting my eyes. I stand, turn around, and scale the stairs. It's time to confront him. Each step closer to his treacherous body rips me further apart from a happily ever after. The wedding, the marriage, destroyed. My hands clench and my nails dig into the flesh of my palms. I grip tighter, welcoming the pain. At the top of the staircase, strawberries swirl in the air. But they don't mask the stench of his putrid lies. A gurgle of mouthwash and a spit in the porcelain basin. Two quick spurts of deodorant. Familiar sounds. And the bathroom door opens.
He steps out, a blue towel around his waist, a knot tied at one hip. A grin spreads his mouth open.
Hey, honey, you gave me a fright there. Was there someone at the door? I thought I heard something.
His skin, still damp from the bath, glows with not one imperfection to blemish it. His green eyes are as vivid as the night I met him. They twinkle still. How does such beauty conceal an ugly soul? Why didn't I look deeper? Have I been blinded by the surface it's encased in? His eyes dart to my hand, clutching the keys against the banister railing. He blinks and shakes his head, and his eyes catch mine.
What's wrong?
I can't stand liars. He fidgets with the knot at his hip, ties it tighter.
Liars? Who's been lying to you, baby?
A laugh busts from me. Even now, when he knows something is up, he'll keep up the honey, sugar, baby, words to soften and make me feel cared for. He moves closer, heading for the bedroom. I turn and stand in his way. I'm so very tired of men hiding.
Ronnie, what's got into you?
You were never in a cult. It was all an excuse to fuck around. Am I right?
You're insane.
I edge closer. How many women has he hurt with his lies? How many trusted him to be who he said he was? When you fuck someone who is lying about their identity, it's rape. I jab the house keys repeatedly into his chest. Am I right? Am I right? A vein twitches in his neck. I jab him again. His skin tears. Scratches of blood appear.
Get off me. You're getting needy again. Insecure.
James has been here. He's a sleazebag. Maybe even worse than you. But he's told me all about you and the things you see and do.
You should have left things alone.
Graham whispers.
But you could never do that, could you, Ronnie? Always had to know what I was up to. Always sniffing around, watching. Why didn't you tell me James had arrived?
My hand swipes under his towel. Fingers clench around his balls, squeeze tight. He whimpers and pushes me to the floor. My head bangs against the staircase and pain blinds me.
Sorry. Sorry, but you're a fucking bitch at times.
He stands over me, feet planted on either side of my body. Despite myself, a sliver of fear makes me shiver. He shakes his head.
I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not that kind of person.
No, you're a liar, aren't you? He nods.
I always tell women the cult thing. And throw in a fake marriage. It's amazing what women will put up with to fix a man. They all want to be the special one. The one that changes them. The one that heals them. Maybe it's a mothering thing.
He lifts me to my feet and kisses my forehead.
At first, I thought you were like the rest. Just a fling. But then, I started to like you. How could I confess it was all a lie after so long? And we've been having fun, haven't we? You can't deny that. So it wasn't all bad. The wedding was a problem, of course. But I thought after the ceremony, you'd forgive me. You always do.
His dick is pressing against my stomach, protruding rock hard from his body. He's turned on by this.
After the honeymoon, I would have confessed about the cult thing. Then we would have carried on living our own definition of love. You would have got used to it by then. And we could have met each other's families with the slate wiped clean.
He moistens his lips.
But you've ruined all that now.
He kisses my chin, Then his tongue licks slowly up my face. Saliva coats my skin. I keep still. Let him. He stands back and I smile up at him.
It's better it's all out in the open anyway. I love you, honey.
He says. I grip his arms, swing my shoulders back, then lunge forward and smash my skull into his nose. A sharp crack stings the air. Blood spurts and dribbles onto his chest. I step back. He wails and fumbles his fingers to his face, blindly searching for the damage. Fuck you, bastard. I whisper, pain flaring between my eyes. My vision blurs and I step back, my feet shuffling underneath me, toes curling over the edge of the top stair. My hand wraps around the banister, fingernails clawing the wood for traction. But it's no use. My damp hand slides off. His mouth jerks open, and he stretches his arms out to catch me. But I fall, screaming as I plummet through the air. Ronnie! He shouts. Ronnie! Oh my God! My head slams against the landing at the bottom of the staircase, and everything fades.